Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thank you very much for having me here. Looking forward to your comments and opinions on the subject. Well, before I begin, I should tell you a couple of things. So, within the submission of the paper, well, the abstract, and this presentation, I had long and fruitful conversation with a great friend of mine, Elias Cohen, and he gave me such interesting ideas that I invited him eventually to write this paper together. So, at some point, it will be a common project. For now, this presentation reflects mostly my take on the subject, but you can hear his voice at some point. And I got a little bit too optimistic when I sent you the abstract. I promised you two things. Well, in fact, the discussion of two issues. I'll be sticking to the first, and the last one will be in the Q&A. We'll see. Great. Well, let's begin. Everybody here is familiar with Shakespeare's Hamlet. There's a guy, Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. At some point, he commissioned the play The Murder of Gonzago in order to indirectly accuse his father-in-law of murder. And there's no King Gonzago in Hamlet. He's a fictional character within the frame fiction of Hamlet. But he remains real only in the world of the story within the story. It's a classical case of stories, well, within stories. Normally, it's a character that tells a story. Well, there in this story, there may be a couple of fictional characters. They do different things. Maybe they can even invent fictions of their own. An interesting and complex embedded structure would be the Arabian Nights. So, there you have fictional characters that tell stories about other fictional characters that might tell stories of their own. I'll be calling those telescopic fictions. Why telescopic? Well, it works like a telescope. So you have the... Do I have any... Oh, yeah. So Hamlet, then it's Gonzago. Maybe Gonzago was a writer as well. You have, I don't know, Victor Popa here at some point. So that's the idea. You have a base fiction. Well, this would be an embedded fiction. And then you can have higher order embedded fiction as well. They can branch out. Here, if there is an offer, a double offer, let's say, that writes two different fictions. Let's get back. So, in telescopic fictions, at least, there seems to be at least one fictional starting point. So, a fiction that is not embedded in any other fictions, but the branches can be embedded, well, two times, three times, like that. Let's get some vocabulary sorted. So, when I will be talking about fictions, I'll be talking about the complex, so the embedded structure as a whole. A subfiction would be those small squares. The frame fiction, well, in an embedding structure or in embedding relation, there are two subfictions, a frame fiction and an embedded fiction. And in telescopic fictions, there seem to be at least one subfiction that is never embedded. It's a sort of fictional starting point. So this would be called a base subfiction. And the aim of this talk will be, well, seeing that telescopic fictions are not the only kind of fiction within fictions. Telescopic, well, that's the idea. Ouroborean ones, let's forget about hybrid for a moment. Ouroborean ones will be a new, interesting maybe, case of fiction within fictions in which there is no base fiction. So the outline of the paper will be, well, I'll explore some new species, I will criticize some arguments against the possibility of their existence, and I'll give a positive account of such a phenomenon. So, I'll be talking about a subspecies of Ouroborean fictions. Well, Ouroborean fictions that have only two subfictions. Well, what are Ouroborean fictions then? The idea was born out of, well, maybe a silly question. What if there is no fictional starting point? Why do we have to have a base fiction from which all the embedding relations might start out. Well, the name comes from the Ouroboros. It's a thing in the Greek mythology. This guy, sort of a loop, eats itself. What are Ouroborean fictions? Well, characters, basically, characters in a story, F1, well, they tell a story in which some other character, Victor Popa, for instance, let's say, of F2, tells a story that is the fictional, well, starting point. Well, in fact, there is no fictional starting point because there is a loop. So characters from different sub-fictions make each other up. Let's get into an example, the butterfly effect. There's a butterfly proficient in English that took at some point in his life writing classes. He thus began writing about a young philosopher interested in fiction who enjoys American literature. This fictional philosopher himself is a writer. He writes about a butterfly proficient in English that took at some point in his life writing classes and began writing about a young philosopher interested in fiction who enjoys American literature. You can add many more details if you want. Maybe the butterfly is lactose intolerant. I don't know. And this philosopher happens to be me, the real author of this text. That would be the drawing. Well, we have a butterfly subfiction. There's a butterfly, proficient in English. He even has a pen. Writes about a philosopher. Well, in this case, I think it's Socrates. And Socrates, well, is a writer himself, and then he writes about a butterfly. That would be a straightforward manner of understanding this fictional loop. I'll be calling this the loop. Well, you might ask me, why bother? Is there anything to do with all those strange embedding relations? Well, I think the Ouroboran case is not really artificially constructed. TBE, as we'll call the butterfly effect, is not the only instance already in circulation, let's say. Thanks to a friend of mine, well, apparently, Sophie's World, there's a book that high schoolers tend to read about history of philosophy. This fiction seems to be an Ouroborean one. Why? There's a girl named Sophie. She receives some papers, well, strangely, receives some papers about another girl, Heidi. And this girl, Heidi, in fact, reads a book about Sophie. So it loops back in. And the straightforward interpretation of this novel would be, well, there's a fictional loop, but that has to receive some justification. Can this sort of interpretation be, well, just? I'll try to say that it is in fact just. And not only that, this critical aim of, well, getting some justification for some interpretive practice is not the only consequence of, well, this talk, but once you accept Ouroboran fiction, you can have lots of puzzles. Let's see some of those. Well, you can ask if Ouroboran fictions are necessarily a species of impossible fictions. That gets into another fictionalizing issue. TBE, with the last clause, the identity clause, that identifies me, the real author of the text, and the fictional philosopher. Well, I seem to have all the properties of that guy in the story. Am I really a fictional character? By simply writing the text, am I making a sort of butterfly effect on myself and my ontological status? We'll see maybe in the Q&A that. Second interesting consequence, well, Kripke has a famous distinction between fictional characters and actually fictional characters, and he says, well, the actually fictional characters, like Hamlet, for instance, they really exist here. Whereas fictionally fictional characters, like Gonzago, well, not that much. But once you have this sort of loop, well, fictionally fictional and actually fictional, well, they seem to both be existing here in our world. And the last one, well, you could ask, like Louis Rouillet asked me some months ago, well, are Ouroboran fiction really a case of stories within stories? Because this sort of loop might in fact not be a double normal embedding relations, the relationship that has been reversed, but in fact another one of a different kind. Well, I will not talk about that. Well, why are those questions really important? Well, the first question seems to focus on the link that, intuitionally speaking, we make between fictionality and actuality. When we say that something is not fictional, we say that it's actual, or if it's fictional, then it's non-actual. And I seem to be actual. I think I was thinking that before writing PBE, and now, well, seems to be I'm fictional as well. So can we accommodate all those intuitions? Yeah. But before getting in all those consequences and puzzles, we have, or I have, to prove that world-boring fictions do exist. Well, let's characterize the phenomenon. Here we'll be talking about hybrid a little bit. So telescopic, that's the normal case. Hamlet, the Arabian Nights, what have you. So it's an embedded structure that has at least one base subfiction, so a fictional starting point. And it contains exclusively irreversible embedding relations. Uroborean, as we've seen, there's no base fiction, and they contain exclusively reversible symmetric relations within the subfictions. But once you say, well, there may be some Uroborean, purely Uroborean phenomenon, nothing stops us from saying, well, there might be hybrid. Hybrid, would look like this. So you have a telescopic part and then a Uroborean part. So hybrid, embedding structures that have either base subfictions for terminal subfictions, so like this, there's a fictional starting point and then goes into an Uroborean, let's say, cell, or you have a leaf that is telescopic. An Uroborean cell branches out. That would be hybrid. And they have a mix of reversible and irreversible embedding relations. Yeah. So we could say that hybrid fictions either have roots or leaves, if we take a tree analogy seriously. Well, there are some objections against the possibility of existence of purely Uroborean fictions. One might say, well, yeah, they're impossible to write, so they cannot exist. Well, you could say, well, I have already given you an example, but we'll dwell into on that question a little bit longer. Why are there only one? I don't know what happened. Well, there are three. Yeah, technology. There's also a metafictional objection. Maybe there's also a base of fiction that has a metafictional load. So we'll get, maybe that sounds a little bit unclear. And the last one, well, maybe the embedding loop cannot be closed. And so that sort of loop, in fact, is a telescopic fiction that is infinite. So the second philosopher is not the first philosopher, the second butterfly is not the first the first butterfly, and that branches out and regresses, and that goes to a regress into infinity. Well, let's talk about the impossibility. Well, one might say, well, the Uroborean fiction, if you really think it through, how could that look like? That would be a quotational strategy. There's a butterfly proficient in English that took at some point in his life writing classes. He thus began writing. Once upon a time, there was a philosopher, who was a writer, enjoyed American literature, who wrote. And then you get back to that, and then back to that, and then back to that. And so it's a regress to infinity. You cannot really put a point in the fiction. Well, this wouldn't be the only way of writing Uroborean fictions. Well, you have a meta-quotational strategy as well. The philosopher's stories begin like this. The butterfly story begins like this, and regress to infinity as well. But the way I've written TBE, I characterize it as a boundless description. So practically, I say what those subfictions are about without actually quoting them in the fiction. As you see, there's a butterfly proficient in English. Well, he does begin writing about a young philosopher. And this young philosopher, he writes about a fiction, butterfly proficient in English. Well, the metafictional objection. that might be a little bit confusing now. So the problem is, what's that? What's that about? Is the identification clause part of the fiction? Is it part of the subfictions? Where does it belong to? The aim of the objection is to invalidate the definition I just gave by showing that, in fact, there is no base subfiction. So for this metafictional objection, TBE would look like this. So you have a metafiction. This possibility was revealed to me by Nathan Wildman. So you have a metafiction that branches out and founds, or grounds, I don't know how to say, embeds the Ouroborean cell. So you have the butterfly and then the philosopher, but you have the metafiction then that really does all the heavy lifting by identifying, P1 and P2, the first philosopher and the second philosopher. So, first answer. The metafictional objection is not a strong objection against the possibility of Ouroborean fictions. But it might be a strong argument against the definition I've just gave. So there would be no base fiction. But here, in this metafictional, interpretation of TBE, there seems to be one. Well, there are at least three scenarios. So if the identification clause is not part of the fiction, but works maybe as a sort of paratextual apparatus, then there will be no embedding relation. If it's not in the fiction, there's no embedding relation between the two. It would look like, we've seen yesterday, borderline fiction, the author says on Twitter, in fact, you know, TB, I wrote, 10 years ago, in fact, the two philosophers are the same. So no base fiction, because it's not a fiction. Well, if the identification clause is part of the fiction, I don't see why it should be singled out as a metafiction different from the others. Maybe the philosopher, when he's writing the story about the butterfly and indirectly writing about himself, at some point, he says, in fact, those two are the same. And the aboundance strategy that I adopted might, justify the use of, the identification talk. So I am that guy, so I'm taking a sort of a distance from the actual fictional writing. So the butterfly subfiction that the butterflies writes shouldn't necessarily include, the identification clause as it's presented in TB. It might be just a sort of, my offer is my character, something like that. Shouldn't be presenting things as I did. And maybe the identification clause can be simply omitted. If the only justification of this objection is linked to my insertion of this sentence, I think we can do without that, and I'll be showing why. I'll be giving an example when I will talk about the closing the loop issue that seems to work perfectly fine without any identification clause. So, closing the loop. What is at stake? The question concerns the very possibility of existence of the phenomenon. So, we have a B1 that talks about a B2 that maybe talks about a B... B1 that talks about a P1 that talks about a B2. B2 and B1, they're really similar. They may have lots of shared properties, but they're not really the same. They're maybe different guys, different versions of the same guy, and then, Socrates and Aristotle, they're quite different. So B1, P1, B2, B2, P2, and that goes all to infinity. So maybe it all degenerates into an infinite telescopic fiction. This will be the most interesting part of the talk, I think. Closing the loop, I have a small outline of my strategy. I'll single out some challenges. I'll take apart some adjacent from Reina Hayaki, from an article from 2009, And I'll give a two-stage positive argument in favor of the loop closing. So some challenges. Well, we'll have to find a theory of fiction that allows us to say that different characters from different sub-fictions are in fact the same. I'll assume for the moment that an ontological view should do the trick, but we might get back to it in the Q&A. Another challenge. Well, fiction indeterminacy. There are many, many fictional worlds that are associated to one given fiction. There are at least two different fictional worlds that are linked to the Conan Doyle stories about Sherlock Holmes, one in which he's odd-haired and one is even-haired. And that can be multiplied by any parameter that is not specifically fixed in the fiction. And I might add double constraint. So P1 and P2, the two philosophers, should be the same character or person. I'm not really happy about the person talk. But the same character and the same version of the character. Well, there are many versions of Batman. Well, Christian Bale's is better than Ben Affleck's, for instance. But they seem to be the same character. Maybe the philosopher writes about a butterfly who writes about maybe an more neurotic philosopher who didn't talk to Collège de France. I don't know. So maybe the versions could be different, but the character might be the same. That might not be enough, the same character property, let's say, or dimension to really close the loop. So if we take B and C, we might never know if the two philosophers are identical. Why? Fiction indeterminacy, many fictional worlds, so many probable, let's say, fictional versions of the same character. So even if we have the same character, the philosopher, I don't know, Socrates, we might not have the very same versions across the sub-fictions. Well, Rena Hayek is really against my project. She says that the embedding relation is anti-symmetric. Anti-symmetric might not be the correct word here, maybe irreversible, something like that will do the trick. So Rena Hayek has an article from 2009. The aim is, well, comparing nested fictions to nested possible worlds. And she says that embedded fictions have their place in the nesting structure essentially. Well, she uses nested in place of embedded. I'll be using my terminology. And her, how can I say, her argument against the possibility of Urborean fictions is, well, in fact, TBE should be a story of the sort, or any Ouroborean fiction would be a story of the sort. I tell a story about X, X tells a story about Y, Y tells a story about X. In fact, there should be an infinity of different stories because they have all those small stories, or sub-fictions as I call them, they have a different embedding relation linked to storytelling. Well, why is that? Because they have different embedding or story-making positions. Why is that? Well, Hayek adopts a number of presuppositions, some of those highly questionable. I'll not be criticizing them in detail, but I'll mention some of them and discuss at least this one. So David Lewis wrote in 64, I forgot the name of his truth in fiction paper. He says that the identity of a fiction is linked to a certain act of fiction making. So if you tell a story by the fireplace, it's not really the same thing as writing a novel, so those would be different fictions. And she says, well, Hayek says that, well, those stories are in different contexts, so there should be different sub-fictions. The story about X is not the same as this story about X, because I tell the story about X, and Y tells the story about X, I don't know, in a castle, something like that. I'm not in a castle, I'm in Collège de France. And she says, Hayek, that all the issues regarding the identities of P1, P2, and all the infinite suite of a series of P's, well, you can tackle the issue from an ontological neutral standpoint. Well, here I'll be presenting some motivation for rejecting some of Hayek's presupposition, the Lewis one, and her strategy in arguing that the embedding relation is anti-symmetric. Well, linking the identity of the subfiction to its embedding status and place in the embedding structure seems to be a little bit misleading. I think it's a straightforward fact that, well, we have same content remakes. There seems to be a way in which we say, well, it's the same story, it's not the same artifact, that I can say. The same remakes may have the same content as the original, even if the text or series are altered. So if we change the order of chapters, if we rewrite the descriptions, that changes the artifact, but the stories might still be the same. Maybe I'm running out of time. So the move seems a little bit unmotivated, of saying, well, the relevant dimension to take into account for saying if P1 is P2 and B1 is B2 is the identity of subfictions, well, that seems to be a little bit unwarranted. Why? In fact, it's the wrong level of analysis. That's my second objection to Hayek's take. So her ontological neutrality doesn't seem to allow the possibility of nuance in her account. Two stories might be about different versions of the same character. Well, canon versus non-canon, for instance, in Star Wars. Even about the same version. Well, several storytellers in the same subfictions. So there's a philosopher in TB. There will be a philosopher and the philosopher's wife, and there are two storytellers that they are expanding a given story about the butterfly. Hayek would say, well, there are two subfictions because there are two different art making or artifact making practices. However, this is where I really differ with Hayek, because my take on the subfictions in the drawings I just presented is not about artifact making, but maybe something like content, fictional content. Well, let's get back. The positive argument. I'll be delineating a subspecies of Ouroborean fictions in which the loop is clearly closed, and then generalize the reasoning. So these were the challenges. The idea is, well, maybe there is a practice of fictional twins in which that's an imaginary literary practice. We imagine a fictional version of yourself, yeah, that differs in precisely one thing besides writing a different story than yourself. And this precisely one thing should be as the least consequential thing ever. So has this sort of literary game resides in finding an inconsequential varied feature of yourself. So it's still a fiction making practice. I think it's a constrained fictionalized version of a given character. The idea is that it's clearly the same character, but the versions might be different. So we have to, let me spell it out, the thought experiment. Well, fictional twins differ from one another in exactly one relevant aspect, so they can be identified by their very feature. For instance, brown-eyed Victor, green-eyed Victor. Let's say that the color of my eyes is completely inconsequential. But in virtue of them sharing all the other relevant features, well, exception being they're writing a textually distinct fiction from the other, well, both of them should write in the same fiction-making tradition. So they would be writing fictional twins fictions. Then there will arise two scenarios. Well, and I'll be talking about different fictional versions of Victor. First scenario. Well, a fictional, is it green-eyed? Yeah. A green-eyed Victor is writing about a brown-eyed Victor, who writes about a blue-eyed Victor. And that might regress into infinity if there is an infinity of fictional twins, not color-eyed related, but other things. So the green-eyed writes about the brown-eyed, who might write about somebody else instead of the first one. But there's another scenario. The green one writes about the brown one. How is that possible? Well, in the thought experiment, I have said that the fictional twins and the fictional twins version of myself have to be different from one another in one exactly one aspect. So they could be identified by this varying feature. So the second challenge, the fictional indeterminacy, is met thanks to the fictional, in the slide. But the idea is that those different fictions, fictional twins versions of myself, could be identified by the varying feature. So if the green-eyed talks about the brown-eyed, and the brown-eyed talks about somebody that is green-eyed, then we are sure that the loop is closed, because there are no other fictional versions of Victor that are green-eyed. So what about the second challenge? We have the same version character, but maybe there is some strange possibility of fictional indeterminacy that says, well, maybe they are quite similar in the properties that they have, but the world they're living in is not the same. So the loop might not be closed, completely closed. Well, that is met thanks to the fictional autobiographical dimension of the text, the fictional twin tradition. So everything that's not explicitly stated should be taken as mirroring reality. So both Victors live in a world where the Vatican is the smallest state, for instance. So the brown-eyed and the green-eyed, well, they have to write the same type of text, the fictional twin fiction. And if B writes about a G and vice versa, the loop is necessarily closed. Now we'll get into a more work in progress era, generalizing the reasoning. I think the key seems to be the notion of fictional autobiography. In TBE, the one I gave, the philosopher can be taken to write an indirect autobiography by invoking maybe the butterfly as mediator. So this imaginary fiction writing tradition, I don't know if it really can get us out of a lot more than fictional twins scenarios. But if the fictional twin scenario could be replicated by adding somebody in the middle, well, it would be if P1 and P2 share the relevant features, they have to be the very same, P1 and P2. That would be the... I don't know how to single out these relevant features for the generalizing reasoning scenario. Some doubts against the solution I'll be concluding. Well, if the P subfiction, that's the subfiction in which the philosopher is a character, is an indirect autobiography, does it remain a fiction? Well, I think that both subfictions remain works of fiction in their respective fictional worlds. That might be said, if you take a Meinongian, maybe priest-like account. And is the solution able to grant existence to Ouroborean fictions with enough flexibility in order to be neutral on the possible existence of infinite telescopic ones? Well, as we've seen in this scenario, that might happen. It depends on what inconsequential features and the number of those can be found. So maybe the fictional twin scenario is able to accommodate that. I'm not very sure. Well, thank you very much. Oh, looking forward for...
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.